Joining me today is Andy Heisman, Irish folk hero resisting the globalist tyranny currently casting its shadow over Ireland. During the COVID scam, Andy was sent to prison for 2 months for not wearing a mask and was beaten while in prison, not by other inmates, but by the screws for not wearing a mask in prison. He was kept in solitary confinement for a month and was beaten so bad that he was eventually taken to hospital. Despite the attempts to break him, Andy continues to struggle as one of the frontline resistance against the willful destruction currently besieging Ireland. Welcome once again to Eyes Wide Open, where we talk to people in the front line resisting the demons trying to destroy us and take inspiration from their struggle. I do live streams on the hottest topics every Tuesday and Thursday at 7 p.m. and I publish interviews at least once a week. I'm your host, Lawrence Heisman, and today we're talking to Andy Heisman about life on the front line in the Irish uprising. But by the time you see this video, I will be coming off the back of a week's ban from YouTube for my video on the war on eggs. Yes, that's right. YouTube banned my video about eggs. But you can still see it over on Rumble, which I suggest you do to find out what content is currently off topic. But what this has confirmed to me is that being cancelled by YouTube is inevitable and just a matter of time. So if you want to stay connected, the best way that you can do that is to sign up for my newsletter, which I send out about once a week. The link is in the description below. But now it's time for our guest, Andy Heisman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lawrence. It's great to finally get to have a chat with you. You know,
yeah. And you, I've been trying to hunt you out for a while. You're a difficult man to find, but Providence has brought us together at this time, and I think it's an important time for that to be the case. Yeah,
definitely has. I've been so busy, you know. I don't get much time to make as many podcasts and stuff as I'd like to do, because with the activity that I'm doing, there's just so much organizing behind the scenes to try and get to do more. But I am trying to reach out more, because it's at such a pivotal time. We're all going through the same problems. We have to reach out and network.
Great. So let's just dive straight in.
Yeah.
When I told people I was doing a podcast with you, first question is, okay, well, who's Andy Heisman? And I said, Andy is a guy who's at the absolute front line in this resistance against global terror, the globalist terror that is besieging our nations in the West, Ireland and England. And I said, Andy spent 2 months in prison during COVID for not wearing a mask. So Andy, tell us that story. Let's begin with there.
I will. Well, I was arrested quite a few times because I refused to completely wear a mask in any public place. And that was including the buses, in shops. I was dragged out of shops by guards, which I won that case for not wearing a mask. I was then on a bus, so I was on my way home. My uncle died, and it was through the middle of COVID, the lockdown, and I had gone away to Wexford because I couldn't go to the funeral. Only a certain amount was allowed to attend. But I was coming home, and I was literally only 5 minutes from home where I got off the train and had to get a bus back to my house. And I got onto the bus, and the bus driver was like, put your mask on. I was like, I'm exempt. And he says, it basically came to the guards coming onto the bus and me telling the guards that they were harassing me, interfering with my constitutional right to travel without hindrance, which is every right for every Irish man or everybody in this country. You don't have to be Irish. For everyone in this country, they have that right to travel without hindrance, and nothing can overwrite that constitutional right. So
it's true. It's like we have a similar system here in England, which is the common law, you know, and under the common law, we have a right to travel. We have a right to assembly. We have a right to a freedom of speech. And, you know, I used the same exemption during COVID and I didn't have any confrontations like you did. So why do you think it was harsher in Ireland? Because I don't know anyone in the UK that went to prison for not wearing a mask.
Yeah, I just think the tyranny here is just so full on. They just want absolute control. And before that, like, I had been protesting against the lockdown. I have been on the front line since the very beginning, you know. So I was obviously had me cards marked, you know, as someone that is standing up against the system. And when you do that, the system comes after you. And that's what they did to me, because when they first charged me with the, like there were two false charges. One charge was a failure to produce my name, which I didn't have to because I committed no crime. And then the second was threatening and abusive behavior. And there was nothing of the sort. If anything, it was the guards threatening and the bus driver using that against me to intimidate me to wear a mask. But they had to use them false laws because they had no other law to get me on. But while they kept putting my case back, I was getting further guard intimidation. They were trying to get me to, you know, break the law in some kind of way so that they could take me down. But they couldn't. I went through a lot of unguarded intimidation while this court process was going on, and they couldn't get me. But they had to get me in the in. So they had the fake news media outside the courts waiting for, and they had it all set up. It was all pre-planned that the judge was going to send me to prison so that they could make an example and put me on the front page to scare the life out of everybody in Ireland that if they didn't wear a mask, they would get prison. And with that, they used that to push the agenda onto people. Where I was out trying to fight the agenda, they ended up using me to frighten people with the fake news media. And like they just wrote loads of lies about me and all this kind of stuff. But when they finally got me to prison, which wasn't kind of easy because I was trying to fight as much as I possibly could. But the guards came here to me home and took me. They took me to the prison. I wouldn't get out of the van because I wouldn't recognize the warrant, you know. That's another common law thing. Yeah. I wouldn't get out of the van because they had my name in all caps. And it was a name that's not registered to me. So I was explaining all that to them. And they says, right, come out and ring your solicitor. And when I get out of the van, three of the prison officers grabbed me down, put me flat on my face, start kicking me in the back. I have an injury in my back where I broke it in 2003. And they kicked me right into the broken back and I couldn't walk. They kept kicking me repeatedly, trying to put a mask on my face, and dragged me and put me into what they call here the pad, where they stripped me naked and left me there for the night. And a nurse, she come up to the cell window. And she's looking in and she's saying, just do what they tell you to do. It'll be easy for you, you know. Just wear the mask. And I wouldn't do a PCR test. I wouldn't take any of it. I wasn't wearing a mask. They could keep me in there. And I was shaking when I was in the cell because I was in so much pain. I was just shaking. And they brought me up into another cell and put me into isolation. And this is every prisoner that comes in has to go into 7 days isolation. So I was in the bed.
Isolation, do you mean solitary confinement?
Solitary, yeah. Yeah. That's what it basically is. I was in there for 7 days. And it was tough because I couldn't eat. I was in so much pain. They weren't letting me have any phone calls. They weren't letting me have any contact with the outside at all. So the doctor was coming to the... It was 7 days later, the doctor came back to the cell and she said... She looked at me and she goes, you're after losing weight. And I says, I'm in here in bits. I'm in pain. I need a hospital. You've kicked the shit out of me. You've just kicked lumps out of me. You left me here. And she says, well, if you do a PCR test now, you can go into general population. And I looked at her. And I just says, close the cell door. And she says, well, if you don't do a PCR test, you have to do another 7 days. I says, well, close the cell door. I says, because I'm not doing a PCR test. I says, over my dead body, am I doing a PCR test? And no one's going to force me. And then the prison officer that was beside her, and he goes, are you vaccinated? And I'm looking at him, I says, that's none of your business.
Yeah, as if you put yourself through all that if you were vaccinated.
Yeah, they were coming up to my cell door, kicking my cell door 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, they were coming after me. They wouldn't give me nothing in my cell. They left me, I was in there with no pillow.
How long was you in there?
30 days.
In isolation?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Because after the, right, I'd done the 7, I had to do another 7. And then it was after when she came back, the following week she came back and she says, oh, you've lost more weight. I says, I can't do, I'm in pain. Yous aren't giving me, I need to go to hospital. And I had people on the outside sending letters and stuff to the governor, legal letters, because they came back and told me and says, because I'm unvaccinated, they can't bring me to the hospital. And that the prison was so understaffed. I mean, if people don't realize what's going on in these prisons right now, they really don't. People are dying in them prisons because of lack of care, because of this scam. When I was in there, when I finally got out of isolation and I was with a bloke and he was telling me he was doing 7 years and he says his best friend just died and he says he was getting pains in his chest and he was ringing his bell and because they're so short staffed, he died in his cell.
I mean, that's just what you described. That is torture. There's no other name to call it.
Straight out of the CIA torture handbook, by the way. 30 days isolation is straight out of the CIA torture handbook. You can go and look it up, you know. But to never mind the torture that what I was going through, the torture, the whole country was in prison.
I mean, we're looking back now where pretty much everything we've said has come true. It's been proven true, right? It puts it even into a more absurd lens, doesn't it? Looking back at it and thinking, Wow, did that really just happen? Did they actually do that? And I think hearing your story about the literal physical torture that they put you through for not wearing a mask is an extremely important story that people need to hear, because that pandemic, that scandemic was just a trial run. They've got others planned in the future that are coming down the pipe. And if people fold and bend the knee as easily as they did the first time, you know, there's going to be more of the same coming.
And that's what I kept telling everybody. I says, the more you wear that mask, the more they're going to push this COVID. I was telling them, you won't get into a restaurant without a COVID pass. You won't get onto a plane without your COVID pass. And the mask, the compliance to the mask helped bring all that into this country, you know. Mm. It really was. It was that compliance. It was that control that they had over us. And that's the control we need to break, you know, is because it is coming again. They're setting it up for another time, you know. The first time round was really just getting things in place for the big one, which Bill Gates says, the second one will get our attention, he said.
Mm. You know, hopefully they won't be able to pull that off. They're threatening it, of course. But I think more and more people now are becoming aware of what happened over those last 3 years, is that it isn't just a small minority like they were trying to tell us it was during that pandemic. Actually, it's probably a growing majority who now would reject any further scams and imprisonments and gulags that these guys tried to enforce upon us the last time. So I think it's important that we get stories like yours out and the word out, because people need to know what happened during that absolutely, you know, insane period.
Or before I was put into prison, when I was dragged out of a shop because I went in to get toothpaste and a toothbrush and I wouldn't wear a mask anyway, I was dragged out of the shop and I was dragged into the Garda station. They stripped me down naked, left me in a cell, and then brought me to a court where they brought me underground in the CCJ, the Criminal Circuit Court in Dublin. And underground, there was these two vans full of prisoners. And then all I could see is these doctors and nurses. It was like something out of a horror film. Do you know, walking over with the tray and stuff like that. And here's me in handcuffs with two guards and holding me, and they were screaming, get me out of here. And they're like, to the test, the judge won't see you without a test. I'm like, well, the judge isn't going to see me then, get me out of here. And then they were screaming into all the vans. I was saying, say no, say no. And then the vans were showing, yeah,
What a time to be alive.
One person, and you want to hear them, and they're in the north, get him out here, get him out here, get him out.
But it's funny, isn't it? You know, a lot of people took that job just so they could go on holiday. That was one of the sales tactics that the state used in Ireland, in the UK, across Europe. But the irony is now is that the 15-minute cities are coming in, so you won't be able to travel anywhere. It doesn't matter if you've had a job or not.
It's just how filled were people, you know. I can understand.
Well, I think I can understand to a degree. Is that, you know, why would you think that the government would lie to you on such a scale? And if you haven't done any research into these matters, if this is something that's new to you, yeah, of course you would assume that if the government are warning you of a deadly disease, right, then yeah, initially you would go along with it because, you know, you want to make sure everyone's safe. But before long, you know, we started to see some total absurdities that were being presented by the government and the scientists. And, you know, it was difficult to not question the science rather than trust the science. But people were so hypnotized into what they were talking about that it was difficult for them to wake up from it.
These are the people that we've been trusting all our lives. We've been, you know, it goes down to our doctors, it goes down to our schools. You know, these are all the people who have been we've been able to trust with our lives, you know. Mm-hmm. And for the way they've just, who was going to expect that they were going to flip a Luciferian medical procedure onto everybody? Nobody knew it was coming like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So we were hit cold, you know. But I'd say 90% of Ireland was vaccinated at the beginning, took the first vaccine. Mm-hmm. And the numbers have dwindled. Nobody is going for a vaccine over. And anybody I talk to now, they said, no,
true.
Because
we've had to fight for them to figure it out because we've been able to we've a high cost case going on to stop for an injunction to stop the injection of babies and children, which has already been rolled out. And they keep kicking that down the line. We have so many investigations after opening up that the mainstream media had to come out and recognize the work that we're doing. And it's finally, after so long, getting out there to the public. But the damage is done in many cases. And that's the problem that we're under, is that I'm working with so many vaccine damaged people that have come forward, you know, including myself. I think we're all a bit vaccine damaged, you know. Whether you're vaccinated or not, it's damaged us all because I've lost loved ones to the vaccine too, you know. So people now, they want justice, you know. They're going to a pound of flesh because they've lost it, you know.
But especially as these citizen investigations keep uncovering more and more of the details of how demonic this entire operation was, the anger is going to rise. And the anger rises, justice will be demanded. And justice is legal revenge, isn't it? You know,
it will. And it's not going away anytime soon either. No. Like, because the lives are already lost, you know. They could have stopped this. The information that I've been working with, that the analysts here who has been gathering all the evidence for all the cases that has been going in, books and books and books of evidence has been gathered over the past 3 years. And they know. They have been given all this evidence. Every week they've been given a new book of evidence on all the deaths that is happening. And they still continue to keep going because it's Big Pharma who are in complete control of Ireland right now. Complete control of Ireland. Most of the pharmaceutical companies are coming here for a free ride. And they're well established here now. And they run the show, they run the media, they run the government, and they've all got shares in Big Pharma here. So obvious they're going to push it as far as they can go, because every government in the world is giving them millions for a vaccine.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, and some of those contracts that the government have signed with companies like Pfizer, it's just insane. It's like they've signed over the government to a private pharmaceutical company.
This is what they're doing. They want to give all of their control over to the WHO or to the WHO, you know, so that they can set up their worldwide medical thing so that they can go around making up viruses everywhere. You know, so this is like, once this is where we have to really come together, because it's a worldwide problem.
It really is.
Not just us over here. It's not just, it's not an isolated problem. It's all of us that are feeling this, you know.
So tell us about, let's go back to prison a little bit.
Yeah.
So you did 2 months. What was it like once you got out of isolation and you had to spend the rest of your time with the general population? What was the mood and the vibe like within prison?
Well, I only got to stay with the lads in general population for like about a week, and then I was kicked out of prison. But
before you cause any trouble with the general population, before you can wake them up.
No, because like I couldn't walk. I was after losing weight. I mean, I didn't shave or nothing. Like when you're in isolation for a month, like when I was gone down to general population, people were saying, oh, after 1 week of isolation, my head was fried and all. Like, and I was like, I'm just after doing 30 days of it. Like,
but what was that like psychologically? Do you remember, or have you blanked a lot? How was you getting through a day during that period?
I got a Bible requested, and the chaplain came up and he said that I have to ask you to say, you know, I have to ask you for us, but a Bible was requested for you. I just have to make sure that you're not offended. It's like, that's all I need, is just give me a Bible. And I actually read the whole Bible while I was in. I had great company. I went through so much interiorly that I was making a pilgrim out of what I was going through in there. Because
so that was quite a positive experience, just having that time alone with the Bible. Because when else would you have that time to read the Bible, you know?
Exactly. I had a lot of sins that I needed to repent from as well. And I was using that time for that. And I was like, if the apostles were in this exact same situation as me, you know? And I felt that when I was in there, you know? And when I went through a spiritual journey in there, and it wasn't easy, believe me, I was in there. And I really thought God abandoned me altogether, because I watched the news and, you know, it flipped on the TV, and all I'm hearing is that the vaccine is being made mandatory in, can't remember the code, Austria or something like that. And I freaked out in the cell. I freaked out to bits. I freaked out. I was thinking they're just going to come in here, because Ireland was like top of the spear for what's coming, you know. And it was like, right, I'm in prison. They're going to make it mandatory. They're going to come in my cell, hold me down and just jab me, and I can't run nowhere. So I had, you know, I did go through them
terror.
Like moments. It's like, what am I going to do? You know, but then.
But that's why martyrs are so dangerous to the regime, because when people are prepared to put themselves through sacrifice in order for their beliefs and not doing anyone any harm, it reveals the tyranny of the state. And the state has to hide its tyranny behind the veneer. Yep. Of democracy, because once tyranny is exposed, then we have a duty to revolt, rebel, and resist any form of tyranny, especially in our highly, you know, highly developed nations who've got common law jurisdiction. You know, and I think that's the power of the martyr, and that's why they hate them so much, because they expose the bare naked teeth of the, you know, the demons who are running the regime.
You know, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. And that's what they've really took away from us over the past 60 years. They've taken a lot of strength away from us, you know, where we've gone so lukewarm that it's, you don't see many people fighting for that truth, you know. And but there is more. There's so many more. Even here in Ireland, you know, there's a lot of people after waking up. And
courage. Courage is inspiring,
serious,
isn't it?
Courage, you know? Serious courage, you know.
Yeah. But it's inspiring when you see it in one. You know, it spreads. It's you know, it's contagious. Unlike the virus, courage is contagious.
It is. It really is. You know, and it's spreading across this country, and it's taken its time too, because Ireland. It took us a long time to get up and running. You know, every country around us was up having having millions out onto the streets for marches, protesting. But Ireland We've been hit so hard. We really have. We've been hit so hard over here. It was very hard to get people out, you know.
But
the labeling.
That's why I was so inspired and so encouraged by Ireland's current stand, you know, regarding the migrant crisis, because watching what happened in Ireland during COVID was quite demoralizing. Because everyone seemed to just roll over with it, you know. There wasn't the resistance was only in small pockets like yourself, and maybe those pockets that have grown enough to create the momentum that we're seeing now with the migrant crisis. Because the opposite's the case in England, whereas during COVID there was actually quite a big resistance that ended up creating this real head of steam in London. I mean, in Liverpool, we run some protests and other places, but in the end, it was London that was like a million people on the streets. And exactly. I think it was instrumental in the government saying, okay, that's enough. We're going to pull back. Yeah. But when it comes to the migrant crisis, it's like Ireland was during COVID. There's nobody, because their weapons of propaganda are so powerful in order to, you know, getting the population to bend. But we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, so,
with the prison situation, what happened when you got out? How did that feel?
Well, honestly, when I got out, I didn't actually tell anybody, because I knew there was people protesting outside the prison for me 2 days a week. And I was so grateful to them for keeping me in the public eye and bringing a lot of awareness to what I was doing. But when I wanted to get out, when I was getting out, I just wanted to come home, you know, and I needed some time for me after everything and recover. I couldn't recover. Like, they brought me to the hospital after the second week, you know. I didn't even speak about that there, because after I'd done my second week in isolation, they brought me to general population for one night. And then the next day I was just finished my dinner. They had 20 screws outside my cell door calling me name. Come out. And I didn't know what was going on. And I got a fright and I was like, right, here it is now. And I thought I was getting under hiding. And they didn't give me any time to make a phone call or nothing. And they just dragged me into the van and brought me to the hospital. Kept me chained to the bed for the whole night. I got x-rays, everything done. They found that, you know, the injury in my back needs an operation. He says, but it's not so severe. You can wait for the operation. So they brought me back to the prison, and then I had to start the whole 2 weeks all over again.
What, back in isolation?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I was outside the prison.
Just reset it all. Oh God.
I had to do it all again.
So do you think that was a conscious decision, or was it just incompetence on your behalf?
There's no doubt about it. It was a conscious decision. Let him give him as much isolation as he possibly can.
Well, they were trying to break you, weren't they? So that when you were released, that was going to be the end of Andy Heisman and his uprising, you know?
Yeah.
Well, little did they know.
Little did they know, because they were making me so much stronger. When I did get out then, I came home, I was recovering, I was eating well, I was able to sleep. Because the beds in the prison, they're like up and down like this and they're metal. I couldn't recover with my back, you know, but once I got home, I start recovering, start getting myself confident again, you know. But I was in a different kind of confidence, because I meant business this time more than I ever did. And I wasn't letting nobody stand in the way of what I needed to do. And what I done first was, is we started, I tried to get as many groups together, and a friend of mine has a boat, which is 130 years old. It's a Galway hooker. And it was in the film for St. Patrick. It helped St. Patrick escape, you know. So we got this boat and we sailed down the Shannon for 7 days on this boat. And we did a whole documentary on it. And we went into every single town, leafleting, campaigning, you know, and bringing camaraderie between all the groups, you know, and getting them all to use their profiles. And it was easy. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't out on the front line type of thing, but it was the front line, because nobody else was doing these things. But once we did that, it was time for me to get serious. And I had people coming to me that were vaccine damaged. And I knew then, because I had gone to the vaccine centers to close them down before, but this time was a completely different kettle of fish for me, because I was going to these places and I was making sure that I was closing them down, but I was doing it within the law. And I would go there with a different tactic every week to the same place that I had them reduced to open one day a week. They had barricades around the whole place. They had to pull frosted windows up. They had to bring in 4 extra security guards, because I was going there every week, me and me film crew and the whole lot, and recording everything and putting these videos to go out viral to start saving our country. And I meant business. We went around, we got investigations opened into Pfizer fraud all over this country. Once we had the pulse number for that, we went around to all the vaccine centers and served everybody with the papers that we used to open the Pfizer fraud in Ireland. And it was so hard on me, because doing these vaccination centers, it really pulled me apart, because I was watching kids going in and they're being dragged in. They don't want to go in. They're literally being dragged in by their parents to get this
terrible
vaccine.
I can't watch those videos when I've seen them before, where, you know, kids are being force vaxxed basically, aren't they? Because they can't put up any resistance.
I've been watching it. When we know what's in these vaccines, you know, we know the danger that it's causing, what it's going to do to their DNA and their whole life. It's a game of Russian roulette.
But even if you know those things weren't in it, you know, seeing these kids being forced against their will and they're crying and they're pushing them away, they instinctively know that they shouldn't be taking that. And then seeing the parents pushing them and forcing them into it, it's terrible. It's really, really heartbreaking, because it's one thing an adult making a decision and consenting to, you know, doing that themselves, but forcing the kids, I mean, that is the lowest of the low.
But then you really do have the flip side of it. When you talk to parents and you give them the information and they turn around, they go, oh, I didn't know this. And they turn around, they leave. Well, let me tell you now, there's no better reward in this world.
Yeah.
No money can come near that. When you have just helped save a family from the risk,
because, you know, it's the just risk. The risk, isn't it? That's what you're saving them from is, you know, because some people will, you know, be fine. Other people will be damaged. So it's the risk that you've removed from the equation, which is a powerful bit of activism, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, no, it really is, you know, and we've done really well with that. We've pushed them back massively here in Ireland concerning the vaccine, and we still have ongoing court cases dealing with them with the High Court injunction. But man, they're not making it easy. Costs a lot of money. High Court injunction is $100,000. We're trying to go through the court so that it can be paid for by the government, and they're making, like, they've set a whole day up in court just for this, and it's such a big distraction when kids are dying, and it's like, why do we have to be worried about this money right now when kids are dying right now? And the judge knows that kids are dying right now. Mm-hmm. But yet, he'll say a date in March for the 10th, and you know, and then take it from there. But it's just another ploy.
We have to push back somewhere, you know, and definitely. You know, we have to expose the evidence in the courts. But like you say, is that that's a very much closed shop. And the you know, how unbalanced it is that the people who you're seeking legal remedy against are using public funds to defend the claim by the people. The people don't get the same advantage. So they're using our taxpayers' money, which is a bottomless pit for them, to be able to use all of the powers of the state, all of the legal tools that are available to them against us without any legal resources. And I've run a few cases myself. I've been in and out of court, you know, many, 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 many times, to the point where I turn up at the court, they'd all know my name, and they'd all say, how are you doing today? What's the case today? And eventually I run my own case, which is a libel case. And I won. And I won in the High Court, and I did it without a lawyer. Yeah, it was a great victory for me. And It was a really good moment in my life, and it's now part of English legal history forever. But the point being is that sometimes you just have to get in there and get your hands dirty and do it yourself.
You have to. You have because to.
Because like you say, that 100 grand is to pay barristers to run your case for you, you know?
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, it is such a big problem that we're having. And I know it's the same problem in England too, because they may get a high court case because it costs so much money. And they know we don't have this kind of money. Like, you know, 100 grand is just the beginning, really, when you're getting into this, you know. And they know they can catch us with that. And that's what we need. We need good men who have the money to come forward. And they could literally save a country right now.
If they lawyers, you're prepared to work pro bono for, you know, for the cause. Like people, you know, who believe in their own country.
We might have a lawyer for pro bono for the children side of thing, because we'll get into that now in a minute as well. With work that I'm currently doing, fighting the transgender agenda on our children.
Let's move into that, because I think it's a natural point to move into. So, you know, you did your sterling work with closing down the vaccine centres, but there was another calling for you to address.
The trans agenda and the
drag story time in which children are being exposed to this sexual perversion. So tell us a little bit about that.
I will. You know, and you know, just to say, you know, the whole agenda is all connected. You know,
it's a three-pronged attack, at least, isn't it?
Really is.
From every angle. So that you don't know where to fight back. You don't know, because you're being overwhelmed with these.
You are, exactly. And I have been very much like that. And I try and prioritize where I feel I'm needed the most for people, you know. And there's a lot going on in my own family right now. So I can see things very clearly what's happening. The school is after coming out with these books, and they're putting them, not just at schools, the government. And on post, the post office, they've come together and put this list of books together for gender inclusive, but they're giving it to children. And what's in these books is absolutely disgusting, because it's all about teaching children how to do sex acts and how to dress differently. And like, these are ranging from 3 years old upwards, you know, and they get very specific in these books. These books have been in all over the country, all over Ireland, and we've set up campaigns. We have different groups coming together. They're going into their libraries. They're looking for the books. They're bringing them up to the librarian. They are telling them, making sure that the librarian is aware, but also they're calling the guards, because this goes against our Children First Act 2015 is a law to protect our children, which nothing explicit can be shown to them in sexual details. So we have the laws, but when you bring the laws to the police are trying to say it's a civil matter. All right. Now, same thing as what they did in COVID. You want to go to the High Court, you got to have 100 grand.
I did an interview with Catherine Watkins, who is leading the charge with Kimberly Isherwood and others in the public child protection Wales, who are having a similar fight in Wales, because that fight's already been lost in England and already been lost in Scotland. They're still trying to put up a fight to stop this sex education of 3-year-olds and above, which is just abuse, isn't it? It's just too traumatized children.
Should be no sexual education taught in schools whatsoever for children. They should be going there and learning their lessons and learning how to be good people. And if you can learn, even, you know, kids aren't being taught law. They're not being taught how to love. They're being taught how to lust. And they're taught how to, an unnatural law to live. And they're being brainwashed. Look, you know, my kids, they, you know, I dress up for a Superman for them or something, you know, and they like to dress up in their costumes and things like that. But that doesn't make them Superman. You know, they understand when they take off the costume, it was all pretend play. But what they're doing in the schools is that they're using our kids' brains as sponges, and they're making it's okay. And that, you know, this is the way gender is today.
Well, they're trying to corrupt the youth. So the youth become more controllable when they get to an age where they become an asset of the state, so that when they leave the school indoctrination camps, they're, you know, well prepared to be, you know, used and manipulated by the regime for their nefarious ways.
that's if they make it, because the suicide rate between the transgender community and, you know, it's so high. You know, there's not much of a life expectancy for them. They really destroy their lives in so many ways. And not only are they cutting off their own family tree by sterilizing themselves, you know, and they're completely destroying, scarring themselves for lives, because so many children, if they've transitioned young, 80% of them is going to retransition once they hit 16, 17.
Because it's irreversible sometimes, isn't it? It's
what I'm saying, you know, but they're catching them when they're so young, and they're being filled into, like, you will be happy if you do this to yourself, you know? So it's very, very serious right now. If anybody's watching this, there's a website. It's called the IrishEducationAlliance.com. You can go and look up the books that are there. There's a whole list of them. There's a package that is put together to show you the process of what to do in the library and get an investigation opened into this. And the investigations bring massive awareness into your community, because you let your community know, look, the investigation is going, this is what's happened. It's bringing the community together in the awareness of what's happening. And that's what we need, a community awareness. And then you see big change when the community becomes aware to this, because it's really sick stuff.
It's hidden, isn't it? It's beneath the surface. It isn't promoted.
You know, but let me tell you, it's hidden, because when the kids got their books, their list for the books here, for the next year, well, there was books that was left out, which said yet to be decided, you see. So obviously they were already decided. They couldn't show the parents. In case the parents look at them, they'll bring them into the schools, put them in there really sly, so that they weren't expecting such a backlash from us here in Ireland, because we have pushed them back. They've had to rename things and repackage things and re-age things, which that still isn't good enough. They're still targeting our young children to change their sex, you know, and to teach them terrible sex acts. Like, I mean, there's some of the stuff I was reading in these books, I don't understand it. There's words, like, what does that mean?
The thing is, if they believed in it. What
that's a word for cleaning out your back basket, you know, I'm like, what?
If they believed in it, they wouldn't hide it. It would be, this is fine. But the fact that they have to bring it in under the night, you know, and not inform parents about it tells you that they know that this is not right, or, you know, and this is, an awful crime against our children, isn't it?
It's the ultimate grooming to what's going on in the schools with, you know, this is just one agenda that's being put onto the kids, you know.
And people say that, you know, it's a conspiracy theory, but yeah, obviously that's just a term used to silence dissent. And if you listen to Vladimir Putin's speech recently, I think it was about 3 days ago, he addressed like the elite of Russia, you know, the people who run the country. Yeah, and he said that the West is engaged in this destruction, in which they're elevating paedophilia from being a crime into some high status position. And he spoke the truth. He said it to the world. So it's not just me and you, common men, speaking this truth and trying to spread the word. It's people now in positions of influence and power are also shining a light on what, you know, these demonic people who are running the West are really up to.
Falling down around them, in fairness. You know, they've progressed so much that they're in complete destruction. And the only way that they can keep their foot in our heads is by bringing out all these stupid, ridiculous laws. You know, we've got hate speech laws in the post. We've got so many things that they're coming. And the only way that these hate speech laws is because they're afraid of the truth. You know, everything that they're doing is because the truth is the ultimate weapon. It's something money can't buy. They can have all the money in the world, but we have the truth. And I know how to use it. And I'm using it the best way I possibly know when taking these down, because I know it hurts them every time I use it. That's why they have to censor us. That's why we can't get views on Facebook. You know, that's why we're taken down all the time. It's an attack on the truth.
If there's a good one, isn't it? If the situation was hopeless, propaganda would be unnecessary.
Exactly.
You know, but they can have to continue to suppress us because they don't have control, because they know nature and the natural law, and the natural order will just reappear the moment the boot is lifted from the throat, you know?
Yeah, it is. And put like that, 3 years down the line now, a lot of people have, you know, they've been hit cold. They have had time to reflect. Not just that, they're seeing everything that's happening. It's all in front of them and it's on their doorstep. But, you know, the lockdown woke up a lot of people. But let me tell you now, the immigration problem right now is just...
well,
this country's ready to explode in anger, like, you know.
let's move on to that, because that was something that really, really inspired me on a personal level. And it was like really amazing sights to see, because as we discussed, I was demoralized by what was happening in Ireland during COVID, is that people were just not aware of what was going on. And it seemed as if there was a lot of compliance and consent. However, it seems to have awoken the Irish tiger. It seems now that the Irish spirit is once again being unleashed, and it's recreating a national consciousness amongst the Irish that has been beaten out of them over the last 50 years. And it seems Ireland is now awake. And I started to see some of the demonstrations against the obvious crimes that the state is using against the Irish people with this migrant crisis. And the migrants themselves, they're just foot soldiers. They haven't got a clue what's going on. They're just being used as pawns in the game for, you know, people, the billionaire class, who have an overt agenda against not just the Irish people, the English people, the Scots, the Welsh, everyone in Europe. We're all suffering from the same problem. So to see that the counter-revolution began in earnest in Ireland, it was so inspirational. It was great. And that's ultimately how you and I have hooked up. Yeah. So give me some insight into how it happened. All right, tell me the story of how this all came about, to the point where we're now seeing demonstrations across the entire country and people are organizing and speaking out and becoming more militant in their resistance to what is happening to your country.
So as we were watching the videos of the busloads of people being brought into the country, and the country already being full with no hotels left, and starting to watch them being put into these like kind of just big warehouse kind of buildings, people were getting hurt on the street, women were getting raped, people were going missing. A lot of that is really happening. I've been working on a case myself with a girl who's after being raped, and it's leading into a whole sex ring that's going on up there between the migrants in Dublin. It's very serious. From what I know, there's at least 2 girls a day getting raped up there. That there's more, I'd say. It's more. And these girls that are trying to come forward are being censored. So to that censorship, it's making people rise up. Mm. You know?
And because it's so obvious, isn't it? That it's
so obvious. You know, it's so obvious. And it's the one, it's the sad thing that got us up is the rape that's happening and being completely ignored by those in government, because they're coming in and they're completely unvetted. They're coming in and they're not even coming in with a passport. They don't need a passport to come into this country.
Don't they throw them away before they arrive?
But they have, I don't know, I think that's what they're doing in anyway, but they don't need a passport. And they're emptying prisons. These are prisoners that are coming in here. I don't see much military men, because they're so disobedient that they can only come from a prison. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
That's the kind of fruits I'm seeing. But I could be wrong. It could be both prisoners, military men, but it's all men. There's no women or children.
And what kind of men abandon their women and children in a war-torn country? What type of men are they?
What kind of man abandons their country, you know?
But abandons their wife and child in that war-torn country. That's even worse, isn't it? So, you know, all we're seeing is these men. Sorry, go on.
They're coming here. They know. They can go straight down to the social welfare office. They know they can get up to nearly €200 a week. They know that they can get everything thrown at them. They can be put into a hotel. I mean, why wouldn't you come here? You can't get a holiday for that. You can't get a holiday. You know, you can't book a holiday and say, right, we don't need money when we get there. The money will be supplied. Because that's what they're doing. They're coming here for an all-inclusive paid holiday where they get the money put into their pocket. And that's exactly what it is. These are coming here with the best of runners, the best of phones, the best of everything they're coming here with. And we, the government, when we're trying to get something, we're told we've no money.
So what kicked it off then? What was the, it was the East Wall, wasn't it?
East Wall kicked
what
it off.
What was the flashpoint? What was it that created that uprising where people said, no more, this is enough?
They were putting people into East Wall by the bus loads, and the people of East Wall was watching it happen before their eyes, and they rose up to push it back. They were getting out then every night. And then there's another good friend of mine, his name is Graham Carey, and a girl was raped. Me and Graham, we done a lot of work together. We were outside Leo Vadker's house and all that stuff together. And another ultimate warrior, let me call him, he really is, he was helping a girl who was raped in Finglas, and he was getting hundreds of people together, and he was mean in business, but they took him out of the game. They have him completely banned now from social media. They're trying, you know, coming after him that way, and all he was doing was trying to help a girl who was raped, you know. So and that's it's things like that are happening. But more groups, I mean, since then, we have a protest this Saturday at the GPO at 1 o'clock. I'm representing Blanchardstown. We have Coolock, we have Clondalkin, we have Ballyferma, we have all these, I mean, every group around Dublin is coming together this Saturday, you know? And
is this really the biggest one to date?
I don't know. It could be. This year, we've had a couple of really big ones this year. At every protest that we've had thousands, you know, but you won't, the mainstream media, they won't come near me. They won't come extra near me. They won't name me in the paper anymore.
No.
Because of the work I'm doing. Yeah,
they want you to be a persona non grata, don't they? You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
But so one of the ways we connected is that I was inspired by this story. Decided to do a section on one of my live streams about the situation in Ireland. And then I put that out. And I put that out on the same day as the uprising in Knowsley, just by pure coincidence, right? And I'm from Kirby, which is within Knowsley. And the resistance was that the Kirby community had enough of this forced migration being imposed upon them without being asked. Without it being put to the electorate, right? Yeah. It's non-democratic, therefore it's tyranny. If it's being forced upon us against our will, it's tyranny. And we have every right to repel and rebel against
it's a duty.
That. It's
duty.
Duty. It's an absolute duty, right? Because for every right, there's also a duty. You don't just get rights willy-nilly. You have to fight for those rights. And that's part of your duty as a man to stand up and resist what's going on. So the people of Kirby rose up. On the same day as I released that video, which was just such a crazy coincidence for me. And it was a really powerful, potent moment in the struggle. And okay, a police van got put on fire, which a lot of people are saying was set up by the police in order to create bad press. And if you look at the story, there is actual credibility to that because the police never abandon police vehicles. They don't abandon them and leave all the doors open. Right.
Only when they want something, right?
So that happened. And because I've been doing this for a while and you have too, is that I knew what would happen next. I knew the playbook that the government would use, or the state, the regime would use against the people of Kirby. And it was almost to the letter. Said they're going to call you far right the next day. And that's exactly what happened in lockstep. You had the media come out, the local newspaper, you had the local MP, you had Jeremy Corbyn. Right. And anyone else that wanted to jump on the bandwagon and some of the actual community who had also been primed all started to go far right, far right, far right, or shame on you. Basically, it's just a new form of heresy, isn't it? You know, and that's what they were saying, shame on you.
It is.
And it worked. It was an effective
Marxist infiltration, though, you know.
Yeah, 100%. But it worked against the community, unfortunately. And that phase of the uprising was squashed. Because the next week there was meant to be another protest and nobody turned up because nobody wanted to take that kind of heat. In Ireland, you faced the same in that you had Leo Varadkar, the prime minister, or the Taoiseach, as you call him. It's not prime minister, it's the president, isn't it? He came out and said the same thing against the Irish people, calling them far right and racist in order to squash the rebellion, but that doesn't seem to have worked in Ireland. It seems as if, you know, you've continued to struggle despite the smears that are being thrown against you. What's your take on that?
Well, I think he's just come out. Nobody believes a word out of his mouth anymore. We're so sick of him and his antics of what he's done to this country. He's no love for this country. He's been completely anti-Irish. And we see through it now. We see through it. You know, he really doesn't like this country whatsoever. And he doesn't like the Irish people. He's really put the foot down. He's not taking control. Like, the cancer, everything that's gone running rampant in this country, he hasn't taken care of one thing. He's only taken care of Ukrainians and everybody else that's come into this country. That's his first priority. You know, you are not an LGBT supporter. He's not on your side. And that is the way it is right now with him. But people see through it. I mean, just before, he's on his third term now, and he was never voted in. You know, never voted in. But yet he's on his third term. And just before he took his third term, he was caught in a nightclub cheating on his husband, kissing another fella in a pub, you know. And this is all on video, just before he went in and took the office. And it was a setup, a complete setup. And it was a setup and another attack on marriage, because anybody before that was caught having an affair outside their marriage in government, they lost their job. But for somehow...
They still do. They still do if they're straight, don't they? But it seems that he's a protected class. Yeah.
Well, because it's Leo Varadkar, he cheated on his husband, he gets promoted. Wow. If this all goes back to, you know, you sent me the video, I actually watched that and it was brilliant about how they use the lowest in society, like the, you know, to lift them up and to put the foot on the intelligent people and give them no voice.
Bio-Leninism, it's called. It's a theory of, it's a theory of how these financial elites are controlling our governments and our government institutions and our cultural institutions is by elevating, you know, people who shouldn't be elevated, you know, and therefore the elevation of these people commands absolute loyalty to the party, and they will do whatever they're told, regardless of who it offends.
That's exactly what we have there. And that's exactly what we have, you know. So nobody is happy with Leo Varadkar. Absolutely nobody in this country. The only reason why he's in there is because he's being put there. He doesn't have a vote to back him. He doesn't have it. So that's why we don't listen to him. And that's grown massively, you know, it's grown massively. And we're making sure that we're at the front spear, making sure that that grows, because we have to get them out. We really do, you know.
Don't you have a similar problem in Ireland that we have in England, whereas, okay, the Tories are the worst criminal operation we've seen in a while, and they deserve to be chased not only out of office, out of the damn country, right? But the problem is that all they're going to be replaced with is Keir Starmer's Labour Party, which is just Tony Blair version 2. You know, he literally works.
Need to be on trial for war crimes.
Yeah, so this is a big problem that we've got, is that a political system, never mind just the party that's in power currently. In Ireland, you've got a problem with Sinn Féin, which is meant to be, you know, the voice of the people.
We have a very, very big problem with Sinn Féin. They have sold us out a long time ago now. Over 60, 70 years, they've infiltrated by the Marxist agenda, taken over, disbanded. And Sinn Féin is pretty much the same. They're all globalist leaders. They're all part of the WEF. You know, they're all part of that. They want open borders, Irish out, immigrants in. That's their motto to me, you know. And it's been like that since the abortion referendum here. They've just wanted to kill us every step of the way.
It is genocide and it is ethnic cleansing. Make no mistake about it. That's what it is. Even though that powerful, evocative language, it's true. Going on.
It is the truth. And it is hard to say. And, you know, for anybody that's listening to this, you know, and might understand it, you know, this is what's really happening. And it's happening at such a fast rate. We're being targeted in the womb. We're being targeted in the schools. We're being targeted in our doctors. I mean, we're being targeted in the churches. There's nowhere we can go. There's no safe place right now that you can go to. you know, and it's all a plan on this depopulation.
Have you heard of Matt Letizia?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Very famous footballer, right? Great guy, speaking out. Mm-hmm. And I seen a video of him saying recently, he said, man, he says, I've just discovered something called the Caligari plan, right? Right? And I was like, Letizia really is on the Caligari plan now. It's like, finally, people are starting to catch up, even people like Matt Letizia. The fact that is entering into the public consciousness is going to wake people up quickly. And like you say, it's happening so fast now because they know the people are waking up, right? Yeah. And as they're nearing their end goal, they know they have to rush towards the finish line before enough of us wake up and say, whoa, let's stop this now and let's resist together like we're seeing in Ireland.
Exactly. And that's what's going to happen, you know, and as long as even with us meeting up and networking, we're building big networks, you know, between each other. And it's a collective thing. You know, we can't be isolated anymore.
Mm.
Can't isolate us because it's getting out so much. It's overspilling. The truth is overspilling, you know, and we're making networks I'm trying to network with as many people as I possibly can so that we can get our messages out, so that we can all interact with each other and fight on the same page. And that's what's going to win it. It really is, you know? But I also believe that it's going to take a society outside of society to live in.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Good suggestion, really, yeah. So what's the current state of play? Because the last time I looked, it was that the regime was... you know, calling you racists, calling you far right. But then the regime took it up one step further and said, you know, they were targeting 20 right-wing or far-right influencers, as the term they used, and they were threatening to imprison people as political dissidents, basically. And it's not like Ireland hasn't got a long history of political dissidents being imprisoned. I mean, you've only got to walk around Dublin and there's plaques everywhere, isn't there, honouring the men who made the sacrifice for the country, you know?
It's everywhere, crazy. every little town across this country, there's patriots honored, you know, and they're trying to take these plaques down. But just as you're saying, there's 20 of us on that list, no doubt. But if something happens to one of them 20, that list will be 100.
Mm.
And that's the way it's going, you know. A few of us have been in prison now, you know. Even Enoch Burke, he's been in prison. He's a school teacher who was locked up because he wouldn't recognize one of his pupils as a transgender. He wouldn't recognize their transgender. I'm not sure if it's boy or girl. It's all confusing. But they kept him in prison for months.
But they relented, didn't they, in the end? Because it was such bad press for the regime that they were imprisoning the school teacher. No, exactly. And didn't he, the first thing he did is go straight back to the school.
He's still there. He's still done. He's still going and work. He
has all their support.
No wonder they're trying to squash the Irish, because that indefatigable spirit is unquenchable. Yeah.
This is what I'm saying, though. This is what I'm saying. The most unexpected people are coming to the front, and they've got so much strength and courage. And I'm not going to lie, it's all Christians.
Mm.
You know, it's Christians that are coming and that are ready to die for the truth. For the actual truth, to say, no, I'm not going to recognize someone as a different gender. And I'm ready to die for that. What are you going to do about it? You know? And that's the attitude we need. That's the courage we need to get out and stand up and be absolute about the truth we believe in, you know, and be bold. You know, I do believe in, you know, being peaceful. But I'm bold.
But we have a right to defend ourselves.
We have a fundamental right to defend ourselves.
You know, and no one can take that away from us.
Get out with the truth. Get out and be bold with the truth. I'm telling you, it's such a buzz. It really is, you know. No matter what they try and bring against you, as long as you're in the truth, you get so much peace of mind because you're doing the right thing, you know. And you're saving lives, getting out and saving lives, especially around this time. It's the most important thing we can do now. With all this agenda, because it's going to come to a head. It really is, you know, and we have to choose what side of history we're on now.
But I think the Irish situation is, you know, news of the Irish uprising is definitely spreading throughout Western Europe. And it's inspirational that we're seeing not just angry men, right? But it's also women and children and pensioners. And you know, that's a brilliant spin that they've done, isn't it? Whereas they call them the far right, and it's an image of a mother with a pram. It's just so good. It's so powerful, so potent.
My new little poem that I'll be singing from now on is that sticks and stones can break my bones, but calling me far right will never break me.
Well, that's exactly what that's the way we've got to deal with these smears, because they've been such powerful weapons against us that it's allowed this situation to get as bad as it is, because they have weaponized these words and concepts with such a heavy duty propaganda that up until recently, being called those names could lose you your job, could lose you your wife, could lose you your career. So they definitely had a definite potential damage to you that caused people to, you know, okay, that's enough from me. I'll keep my nose down and I'll keep my head down, or I won't even say it to begin with. But now people, the threat of what's happening is worse than the threat of the name, isn't it? So,
It's so inciting. Like, I've had the Antifa come to me and they have big banners calling me a Nazi and calling me everything. You know, I've been up against it all. Mm. And, you know, it only takes somebody who's not really awake to look at that and go, oh, look at that. They're attacking some Nazi there. And they actually think you're a Nazi then. Yeah. You know, and I'm not a Nazi. I don't want that kind of stuff, you know. Yeah. I'm just an Irishman trying to sort my country out. Yeah,
but they, you know, they're aware of the collective propaganda that is wrapped up in the Second World War, and they know how to play those moves and use those tools.
They did the same with the Germans. Yeah, they did the same with the Germans. They got an awful life after World War II. You know, I seen the documentaries about it. It was shocking just because they were German. They didn't know anything.
They've beaten into submission, haven't they, you know?
The submission, you know, and they're doing the same with us. That's exactly it. It's the same template that they're using with us. Label us that way. And, you know, if the mainstream media are pointing the finger at you, calling you far right and everything, well, must be true.
Yeah. but that's what I'm trying to give contrast in, that in England, it has more potency than it does in Ireland because of England's connection to the British Empire and, you know, what happened in the Second World War. But those weapons don't work on the Irish because they were neutral in the Second World War, weren't they? You know, so it doesn't have the same impact upon the Irish. But they're trying hard. And it's great to see that, you know, the protests have continued and are actually gaining momentum and gathering pace.
It didn't work. The media attacks, they didn't work. You know, they still try and call us far right, but we're just laughing at that now. You know, the picture, when we're going up in a protest, there's like six or seven mammies pushing buggies up the front. You know what I mean?
Yeah, brilliant.
The far right, the future far right, like, you know. Oh, yeah, we're just Irish people. And, you know, we've just been right so far. That's, you know, that's as far right as we go.
Yeah, just as far right as we go. But it's been absolutely inspirational for me, and it's given me a real buzz because, you know, when you're in pursuit of the truth and you're trying to expose the lies and the crimes of these, you know, this regime that is being controlled by, you know, higher powers, is that, or lower powers, is that it can be demoralizing and it can be quite depressing, and you can go through periods sometimes where you think, oh God, there's absolutely no hope. And then when you see what's happening in Ireland happen, it's great for morale. It's just a real boost for everyone else, not just the Irish. It's for all those watching as well. We're like, come on.
It's fantastic. You know, it's so uplifting that, you know, it really does, as you're saying, we've been demoralized. You know, get something that will get you up is just, you know, it's a miracle, really, after everything we've been through, you know. And
galvanizes the spirit
around this world.
So what's next? What's next for this movement? Is there any organization, or is it just organic and grassroots? What's on the horizon?
Oh, we're trying to keep it organic and grassroots. We have a lot of Marxists trying to come in and jump on board, which we're well aware of, and we've dealt with a lot of things over the past week alone, and honestly, it's made us stronger. What we've just dealt with, especially with what we've had to deal with, Marxists coming in, trying to lead people down the garden path, as they always do. Any grassroots movement that gets started, it will always, no matter what, it will be infiltrated. And it's having the experience to see it recognize it and cut it out at the root. We did that. And man, the response that we've gotten from it, I'm really hoping to see that response this Saturday with the whole lot of Dublin trying to rise up. I'm really looking forward to this one. And we take it from there. We want to take direct action. We're not going to stay, you know, we're getting out onto the streets, but we're going to be taking real action to start pushing these back, you know. And there's plenty of ideas. There's loads of ideas being spun around, which is fantastic, you know.
You said something to me, which I thought was really insightful. Was that there's a lot of kind of question of why would the Irish government do it to their own people? In the same way, why would the British government do it to their own people? You said,
yep.
Because we're an occupied nation. We're occupied, right? Is that the regime that's in is not Irish technically. It's a foreign, hostile regime that is there to occupy Ireland and do whatever an occupying force wants to do. Expand a little bit on that idea.
You know, it's the same thing I think that's happened in the Vatican. We've been infiltrated, the Marxist infiltration that's been going on in this country for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of years. You know, like we've been fighting it a long time now. And they have got themselves in every single political party now where they've got themselves into the highest positions. And now they're all on the same one world order hymn sheet. You know, they're not our government. It's not our government. It's not an Irish government. They only have Irish names. It's a takeover. Mm. You know, we're in eclipse. The Irish government is in eclipse, just the same way as the Vatican is in eclipse at the moment. It's the exact same thing that's happening for us. We cannot, we shouldn't recognize them as our government. We cannot recognize these people as the governors of the Irish people because that's not what they're doing. They're not governing us. They have the agenda of the depopulation and the demoralization and the destruction of the Irish nation. That's what's in these people's hearts, you know. And they're not our government. We have to get that into our heads, you know. And every part, they have control of all parts of society, including an Garda Síochána, Conn, the medical. They have it all sewn in. They're all working with each other. And, you know, they've just got everybody in the highest. But the best way is just complete civil disobedience to what they're doing. Once we stop recognizing them for their power, they lose it.
Totally.
Yeah. That's the key.
I think it's a really important point because we can see it across the West. Look at Canada. Look at America. Look at Ireland. Look at France. Look at Germany. Look at the UK. Yeah. You have governments who all act in lockstep with whatever the globalist agenda is. It's not like these ideas or policies are grown organically from the governments. It's coming top down and being enforced and rolled out in unison, which tells you that it's an order from above, right? Exactly. And they are, all of these governments are acting dictatorial in that they no longer fear the electorate because they've got the elections sewn up so tight. Either through rigged elections or, you know, they know that they can manipulate the electorate through the media. So is that they can't treat us with contempt, or so they think that they can treat us with contempt, and they can just force this tyranny upon us without, you know, worrying about being removed from power.
Exactly what they're, you know, it's what I see the agenda and what they're trying to do here is that they're openly bringing these immigrants so that we can see them coming in. They're showing us them bringing them in. And we've got some kind of groups that will, you've got the Marxist agenda, the way they put each other then put plants on both sides of the argument just to push for a referendum on immigration. And if we have a referendum on immigration, it's game over for Ireland. Ireland will never be able to say Ireland is for the Irish because Ireland is for the Irish. The Irish people own Ireland, but they want to push to have a referendum to give Ireland away. And if we have that referendum, we'll never win it. We'll never win it. So we're on very dangerous ground here of losing the last bit of sovereignty this country has to a referendum where the country just gives it away and says, oh, well, it's open to the world now. Ireland isn't for the Irish. It's for everybody but the Irish.
But the Irish. Yeah, I mean, it's just ethnic cleansing. No, the call it what you want and wrap it up in any, you know, particular, you know, language that you're trying to hide it, but that's what it is. And in any other country or any other area that we see ethnic cleansing, it's called out as for the crime that it is. But, you know, with the West and the fact that we've been so cooked and we bent the knee so hard, is that we're just going along with it. But Andy, it's been great chatting to you, but that's all we've got time for today. I could definitely chat a lot longer to you. Maybe we'll pick it up, maybe come back on after the next round of Irish Uprising and we can talk about it some further. But before we go, where can people find you, Andy, online?
People can find me on Telegram. They can find me on TikTok, Facebook, Twitter. I'm not on YouTube. I'm completely banned. If you type my name into YouTube, sometimes people get banned now. It's gone that bad.
Well, I'm worried about this episode, to be honest, because we've covered it all. I'm one of the on one strike.
And I also have my website, andyheesman.org.
Mm. Yeah, we've got a similar name. I'm Lawrence Heesman and you're Andy Heesman with a H. It's a very rare name, actually. And any Heesman in England, I'm directly related to. So we might have some common ancestry somewhere along the line, which I think is quite fun.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. My dad did come from England himself, and we do have a lot of family over there too. Yeah. So,
but my great grandfather Heesman is from Putney in London.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so yeah. We might have hung out in a past life. okay, great. So you've given us all of your information. Thanks so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Really enjoyed talking to you. Finally, we were able to make this happen, and I really enjoyed the conversation. Any final words that you want to say to our listeners?
No, just, you know, if you're hearing this and you're getting motivated, there's so much information there that we've talked about that you can use to get out and help people in your area. You know, it's all about getting out and waking up your community. We have to make this a community effort. And when every community rises up, there's no stopping us then. You know, that's the best note I can leave it on, is start making this a community thing with all the issues, you know, and get active. You know, really active.
Andy Heesman, thanks so much for coming on Eyes Wide Open. I'll speak to you soon.
Thank you.
Cool.